Mirror, mirror on the wall, how the fuck long have you been in that stall? Put the tweezers down.
Crystal Clear here. Never drunk, always intoxicating. The enchantress and host of More Morgulons. You're listening to More Morgulons, and thank you for listening.
We are going to have a great episode today about mass psychogenic illness. I also want to share with you a statement that was addressed to the, I think, City of Berkeley by Dr. Edward Spencer, a neurologist from California, who back in the early days of morgues made some interesting statements about his theories regarding the origin and nature of Morgulon's disease.
Spoiler alert, it's pretty cray cray.
There's a lot of crazy proximally and peripherally to Morgulon's disease because it's a crazy disease. But I don't think the origin is psychogenic.
Unless I, myself, and others have the power to imaginate and materialize these materials.
Literally identical objects across the country and the world. How we all manage to craft very tiny gold and iridescent hexagons with hairs coming out of them. Just as a fun hoax to play on the side of our otherwise normal lives, this ridiculousness passes for and persists as supposedly rational rebuttal to the testimony of myself and other morgues, as well as physical evidence. Okay, we all have delusional parasitosis. All right, well, delusional parasitosis is a monosymptomatic delusional disorder diagnosis, meaning that the other diagnoses of substance use disorder, schizophrenia, have been ruled out. They are not psychotic in any other way than this one monosymptomatic delusion. Okay, well, why do all these people with one delusion also across the country and across the world share pictures of very specific objects that are identical? Please share with me the rational explanation for that. We're just crazy. We're delusional. It's all in our heads.
Or we are all talented fabricators of the miniature arts.
Go on the internet and put in Morgulon's hexagons or iridescent hexagon. You will see these weird fucking things that come out of our skin.
To say the experts are often wrong.
And I know that they got it wrong when it comes to Morgulons.
Stay tuned.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, before we talk about mass psychogenic illness, I want to share with you a transcript of Dr. Edward Spencer's comments, The Cause of Morgulon's Disease. I think this is from 2005.
Honorable Mayor and Berkeley City Council members, my name is Edward Spencer, MD. I have practiced neurology in Northern California for more than 30 years. I'm speaking tonight on the issue of health and nanotechnology. A very strange disorder named Morgulon's disease is among us, and the worldwide number of cases is approaching 20,000, with major clusters in the Bay Area and Southern California. There now exists strong data indicating that this disorder is associated with nanotechnology, specifically nanomachines in the form of nanofibers. The National Science Foundation defines nanofibers as having at least one dimension of 100 nanometer or less. So-called Morgulon's disorder presents as brain fog, fatigue, and other neurological symptoms. It is associated with the presence of tiny fibers protruding from the skin, intense itching, and the possible appearance of ulcerative lesions, ringed by a raised crater rim and other strange lesions. The fibers have been widely observed to move There is no satisfactory treatment. Physicians and dermatologists are unfamiliar with this chronic disabling disorder and tend to ignore it. Patients become labeled as having delusions of parasitosis, and this psychiatric diagnosis is stuck to the patients by dermatologists who have not examined the skin under magnification and who have not completed the extensive evaluation necessary to exclude all parasitic skin disorders before making a psychiatric diagnosis. Pictures of the fibers are provided in the packet. And I will direct her attention to the blue fiber with the gold tip. This was removed from a patient. This fiber did not burn until it had been heated to 1700 degrees Fahrenheit. Compare that with hair, which is easily burned, producing a characteristic odor and has a cellular structure. The fibers are shed regularly, and some grow to long lengths, indicating fiber production in the human body. Dr. Genovi has stated of this blue fiber, quote, it has no eukaryotic cells, it has no cell membrane, it is not a parasite, it is not biological, it is a machine.
And then there's a reference to a web article called Gold Nano Anchors Put Nanowires in Their Place.
Also included are microphotographs by Dr. Hildegard Staninger of a blue Morgellons fiber removed from a patient. Note the similarity of a structure. There is evidence that Morgellons disorders carried by insect vectors, as some type of bug bite frequently precedes the onset of the disorder. The agent or agents producing Morgellons are in the sewer systems. Also included are photomicrographs of very strange skin lesions. Morgellons appears almost biblical in its characteristics, like something described in Exodus. Dr. Randy Wymore of the University of Oklahoma sent fibers to the FBI. No matching fibers were found in the FBI forensic database. A contact in Naval Intelligence has recommended looking into smart dust specks in field arrays. The National Register of Environmental Professionals has assigned a task force to look into environmental causes behind Morgellons disorder. I asked the Berkeley City Council to request that the University of California devote its considerable intellectual and technical resources to studying these nanofibers and this disease. Under the wise guidance of Wall Street and insurance companies, American medicine has fallen into an amazing state of degeneracy. Medical care is unavailable for many, access is limited for most, and research money is frequently unavailable except for major drug companies. Using technical terms, American medicine is in the toilet. The response of the CDC has been lethargic to the point of being alarming. A simple electronic microscope, such as you see here, allows inspection of the skin at 50 times to 400 times and allows the clinician to document the existence of fibers. Eyeballs at 2 feet won't do it. And simple equipment like this should be available in the UC, University of California clinics. And of course, we need methods of treatment. This concludes my brief bedtime story. I will be pleased to provide further information as it becomes available. Respectfully, Ed Spencer, MD.
So these are some pretty interesting statements, bold and I would even say shocking claims. I approach them with skepticism since he references evidence or work done by, quote, Dr., unquote, Hildegard Staninger, or Hildegard Saccarello, which is one of a couple of aliases this woman goes by. She is a charlatan who exploits desperate people who have Morgellons, or used to back in the 2000s. I don't know what she's up to these days. There is an episode about her called Busted, Dr. Hildegard Staninger, from November 29th, 2020, season 2 of More Morgellons. I encourage you to go check it out. It's a good one. Short. It's only 14 minutes. But regardless of the theory of nanotechnology being the cause of Morgellons disease, and I'm not ruling it out in any way, shape, or form, you guys, the other day, there was a hair on my head, and it had a band of iridescent green glittering on it. Like, if you go on my Twitter, Crystal Clear at More Morgellons, my Twitter feed, you will see this insane-looking green glowing iridescent hair fiber thing I found on the floor recently. I found one growing out of my head. So, is it nanotech? I don't fucking know, but it's not normal. It's not my imagination. Regardless, Dr. Spencer is right about a few things that he mentions in his statements to the city council. For one, yeah, you're damn right. You can't diagnose as a dermatologist a delusional disorder when you have failed to even walk 2 feet across the room and look at your patient's lesions under microscopy. It's not that hard. In fact, it's your job. What isn't your job as a dermatologist is to diagnose me with a psychiatric disorder before even assessing me. Anyway, he does make a reference in his statements to an article from 2004, November 10th, in at www.nist.gov. NIST stands for National Institute of Standards and Technology, and it is a physical sciences laboratory and non-regulatory agency of the United States Department of Commerce. So he refers to a article that was published on the National Institute of Standards and Technology website. It's actually still there. I looked it up. Gold nano anchors put nanowires in their place. Researchers at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, have demonstrated a technique for growing well-formed single crystal nanowires in place and in a predictable orientation on a commercially important substrate. The method uses nanoparticles of gold arranged in rows on a sapphire surface as starting points for growing horizontal semiconductor, quote, wires only 3 nanometers in diameter. Other methods produce semiconductor nanowires more than 10 nanometers in diameter. NIST chemist's work was highlighted in the October 11th issue of Applied Physics Letters, showing how crystalline zinc oxide nanowires, blue, push, quote, seeds of gold nanoparticles, red, forward as they grow. I have to say that the scanning electron microscope image showing rows of horizontal zinc oxide nanowires grown on a sapphire surface with gold nanoparticles visible at the end of each wire, yeah, it does kind of look like what I believe Staninger and others have called that one Morgulon, the golden head. It's a blue wire with a gold head. Yeah. Anyway. Part of the vision of nanotechnology is the possibility of building powerful, extraordinarily compact sensors and other devices out of atomic scale components. So-called, quote, nanowires, long, thin crystals of, e.g., a semiconductor, could not only link nanoelectronic devices like conventional wire, but also function as devices themselves, tipped with photodetector or light-emitting elements, for example. Light-emitting elements, kind of like the iridescent gluons, truly seem to emit rather than reflect or refract light. I do not know, but it is what it is. It looks like how it looks. An obvious stumbling block is the problem of working with components so small that only the most sophisticated measurement instruments can even track them. To date, the most successful nanowire alignment method involved growing large numbers of the rod-like crystals on a suitable base like blades of grass, shearing them off, mixing them in a solvent, and forcing them to align by either flow or surface confinement on the test substrate to orient most of the crystals in a specific horizontal direction. Further, photolithography steps are required to ensure that nanowires are positioned correctly. In contrast, the NIST technique grows arrays of nanowires made of zinc oxide, a semiconductor widely used in optoelectronics, with precise alignments. The gold, quote, anchors are placed with a chemical etching step, and the orientation of the wires, horizontal, vertical, or at a 60-degree angle from the surface, is determined by tweaking the size of the gold particles. And so this was, like I said, published in 2004. You guys, that's almost 20 years ago. And one of the things I always found interesting about the CDC study was that though it was very limited and we really have no way of knowing whether the people in the study actually had Morgulons, but let's just assume that most of them did. And what they reported in the CDC study was that people who had gotten Morgulons in earlier decades, like the 90s, as opposed to the 2000s, those people reported more fibers. It's not until the later decades in the 2000s that people start reporting glitters, specks, fuzzballs, those things. This would suggest that there has been an evolution of this pathogen over time. Now, whether that was due to the natural evolutionary pressures exerted upon biological pathogens, or whether it simply represents an ongoing progression of design innovations in nanotechnology, I do not know. There is something so uncanny and bizarre and odd about Morgulon's fibers. This weekend, you guys, I had some serious morgouts. I was in the bathroom at one point, looking in the mirror. No, not tweezing. Okay, maybe a little bit, but I was plucking my mustache, y'all. Yeah,
Apparently something happens when you turn 40 and you start growing a mustache when you're a lady. Now, if I could grow a full beard, that'd be one thing. I'd probably just let it Rip Van Winkle me into the next decade of my life, you know? But no, I was plucking my mustache hairs, y'all. And literally before my eyes, before my very eyes, a glitter, an opalescent, white, iridescent hexagon just popped the fuck out of my skin. Intact skin. Just was not plucking around that area. It was like right under my nostril, and I was plucking towards the handlebar of my mustache, not the Hitler center region, but yeah, right around that region in the middle, right above my lip, a white opalescent hexagon emerged. So anyway, just another day in the life of being a morgie. All right, I'm gonna take a quick break. Stay tuned. Morgulons, a mass psychogenic illness spread by the internet. Is that true? You read it all the time, all over. The media reports about Morgulon's disease. All the haters, all the naysayers, all the skeptics, doubters, disbelievers, and defamers of Morgulon's disease have said that it is a mass psychogenic illness spread by the internet. Does this hold up? No, of course not. Let me explain why. Mass psychogenic illness, also called mass sociogenic illness, mass psychogenic disorder, epidemic hysteria, or mass hysteria, involves the spread of illness symptoms through a population where there is no infectious agent responsible for contagion. It is the rapid spread of illness signs and symptoms affecting members of a cohesive group originating from a nervous system disturbance involving excitation, loss, or alteration of function, whereby physical complaints that are exhibited unconsciously have no corresponding organic causes. It's a delusion, y'all. A mass delusion is what they're saying. So if you're wondering about my source, it's Wikipedia. All right, after that first introductory paragraph, it says specialty psychiatry, clinical psychology, symptoms, headache, dizziness, nausea, abdominal pain, cough, fatigue, sore throat. I don't see glitter or fuzzballs or fibers on that list, but okay. Risk factors, childhood or adolescence, intense media coverage. Okay, well, we know that most of us are definitely in that demographic, the coveted one of middle-aged people. We're not children or adolescents. And intense media coverage. Y'all, I hadn't heard shit about Morgulon's disease, but like, I guess the last time I heard anything was in April or March of 2021 when somebody posted a video that went viral about moving fibers and masks that I at the time dismissed. But someday soon, I'm going to make a new episode about nanotechnology innovations in the world of masks that I have been learning about recently. Anyway, causes. MPI, or mass psychogenic illness, is distinct from other types of collective delusions by involving physical symptoms. It is not well understood, and its causes are uncertain. Qualities of MPI outbreaks often include, then there's a citation, and it says, symptoms that have no plausible organic basis, symptoms that are transient and benign, symptoms with rapid onset and recovery, occurrence in a segregated group, the presence of extraordinary anxiety, symptoms that are spread via sight, sound, oral communication, a spread that moves down the age scale, beginning with older or higher status people, a preponderance of female participants. Okay, so the only thing on this list that would apply to Morgulons is the possibly preponderance of female participants, but I'm not even sure about that, y'all. We don't have any population, let alone global, worldwide studies on the geospatial distribution and total case numbers of Morgulons yet. We will, but we don't right now. But yeah, none of these apply to Morgulons. Transient and benign? No, I would definitely not say that Morgulons is transient or benign. Rapid onset and recovery? No, there's definitely not a rapid recovery. Rapid onset? That's debatable. A lot of the people I've met with Morgulons seem to say, when you ask them, well, when did this start? They go, well, I think it may have started in 2012, but I didn't really notice it. It didn't get bad until 2019 or whatever. So
That's just not been my experience or the experiences of other people I know that suffer with this, but okay. Occurs in a segregated group? No, it affects people of all walks of life. Yes, there is a preponderance possibly of women with Morgellons, but there's plenty of men, white, black, yellow, red. There's all kinds of people, all kinds of ages. It is not a segregated group and is all over the world. The presence of extraordinary anxiety. I didn't have that before I got Morgs. Of course I did for a little while after I got them. Who the fuck wouldn't? Man, there's crazy shit coming out of your skin. Spread via sight, sound, or oral communication. I mean, does that include the internet? I don't know. Beginning with older or higher status people, and then it moves down the age scale. I don't see a bunch of young people coming out, Generation Z, talking about, I got Morgellons. I just changed my gender again for the third time this week. I'm now an octopus. Yeah, British psychiatrist Simon Wesley distinguishes between two forms of MPI. Mass anxiety hysteria, quote, consists of episodes of acute anxiety occurring mainly in school children. Prior tension is absent and the rapid spread is by visual contact. And then there's mass motor hysteria, quote, consists of abnormalities in motor behavior. It occurs in any age group and prior tension is present. Initial cases can be identified and the spread is gradual. The outbreak may be prolonged. So the reason why this does not make sense, he's saying prior tension is present. Y'all, we didn't even know each other. We are not a distinct group of people. Again, I mean, now we fucking are because we're Morgies, but that wasn't the case before we were Morgies. While his definition is sometimes adhered to, others, such as Ali Gombe et al. Of the University of Maiduguri, Nigeria, contest Wesley's definition and describe outbreaks with qualities of both mass motor hysteria and mass anxiety hysteria. Do any of them describe outbreaks of people that have strings and hairs and weird shit?
That never goes away? Nope.
The DSM-IVTR does not, that's the most recent one, does not have specific diagnosis for this condition, but the text describing conversion disorder states that, quote, in epidemic hysteria, shared symptoms develop in a circumscribed group of people following, quote, exposure to a common precipitant. There's another thing that does not fit. We were not exposed to a common precipitant because we didn't know each other. Common symptoms. Timothy F. Jones of Tennessee Department of Health compiles the following symptoms based on their commonality in outbreaks occurring between 1980 and 1990. So there's a symptom list and then there's a percentage for the people reporting it. So headache is number one with 67%. I'll just go down the list here in descending order. Dizziness or lightheadedness, nausea, abdominal cramps or pain, cough, fatigue, drowsiness, or weakness. All right, that's the first one on this list that I've heard associated with Morgellons fatigue. Sore or burning throat, hyperventilation or difficulty breathing. I have heard people report difficulty breathing with Morgellons. It is probably highly likely to be associated with anxiety, but you don't know until you test to get an ECG, y'all. Chest x-ray, pulmonary function test. Don't just believe some crazy lady on a podcast. Watery or irritated eyes. Chest tightness, chest pain. Again, that could be anxiety. Inability to concentrate, trouble thinking. I believe we call that brain frogs. Vomiting, tingling, numbness or paralysis. This is only 10%. These are the small percentages. Anxiety or nervousness, 8%. Diarrhea, 7%. Trouble with vision, 7%. Rash, only 4%. 10 years of data he gathered. Plus, we don't have a rash. We have lesions.
That like never heal
or take forever to heal. They recur.
And they're also, full of glitters and fiber and strings and specks and fluff balls.
I mean, we may have a rash too at various stages, certainly the beginning or possibly after trying to treat ourselves with crazy ass shit. But, yeah, that's the main symptom. And only 4% of people involved in participating in a mass psychogenic illness, quote unquote, it very small percentage had anything to do with skin. Loss of consciousness, syncope. Syncope means dizziness. And then itching, the lowest amount, 3%. So do you hear anything in the information so far about mass psychogenic illness that sounds like Morgellons? Not really.
Okay, this section says prevalence and intensity. Adolescents and children are frequently affected in cases of MPI. The hypothesis that those prone to extroversion or neuroticism or those with low IQ scores are more likely to be affected in an outbreak of hysterical epidemic has not been consistently supported by research. Bartholomew and Wesley state that it, quote, seems clear that there is no particular predisposition to mass sociogenic illness, and it is a behavioral reaction that anyone can show in the right circumstances. Intense media coverage seems to exacerbate outbreaks. The illness may also recur after the initial outbreak. John Waller advises that once it is determined that the illness is psychogenic, it should not be given credence by authorities. For example, a poor factory case study calling in a medicine man to perform an exorcism seemed to perpetuate the outbreak. Research. Besides the difficulties common to all research involving the social sciences, including a lack of opportunity for controlled experiments, mass sociogenic illness presents special difficulties to researchers in this field. Balaratnasingam and Jonka, I guess these are two academics, report that the methods for, quote, diagnosis of mass hysteria remain contentious, unquote. According to Jones, the effects resulting from MPI, quote, can be difficult to differentiate from those of bioterrorism, rapidly spreading infection, or an acute toxic exposure. And this is something that I just keep coming back to in my own mind. Whenever you go on, let's just say the CDC's website, and you look at the section on there about bioterrorism or any state public health department website, and you look at that section, it'll say, report to your authorities if you suspect that an act of bioterrorism has occurred. Well, the authorities that people are going to report to with their illness is the health care authorities, like physicians and physician's assistants and advanced practice nurses. They are less likely gonna be like, I'm gonna call the FBI, I've got a weird rash. No. So all I'm saying is that's a huge chink in our national defense armor. These troubles result from the residual diagnosis of MPI. There's a lack of logic in an argument that proceeds, there isn't anything, so it must be MPI. It precludes the notion that an organic factor could have been overlooked. Nevertheless, running an extensive number of tests extends the probability of false positives. Singer of the Uniformed Schools of Medicine has summarized the problems with such a diagnosis. Quote, you find a group of people getting sick, you investigate, you measure everything you can measure, and when you still can't find any physical reason, you say, well, there's nothing else here, so let's call it a case of MPI. Well, here's the thing. When it comes to Morgulons, you didn't investigate, you didn't measure everything you can measure, CDC. This was 12 biopsies they looked at from health records of the previous 2 years instead of the actual areas around the country where people were reporting outbreaks of Morgulons. It's just probably just a test kitchen for the CCP to find out whether or not we were on our toes before they spread the big one in 2020. Or maybe it's not the big one. Maybe the big one's in 2023. I don't know. I hope not. But I suspect there will be something. Well, this is just a fascinating subject, but we are running out of time. I encourage you to read some case reports of mass psychogenic illness outbreaks and just ask yourself, does this sound like Morgulons? No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. This is about as stupid of an explanation to explain the continuous spread of Morgulons across the United States, Canada, Australia, the UK, Germany, everywhere except for China. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but never heard of any Chinese people get Morgulons, just saying. But yeah, mass psychogenic illness is about a stupid explanation for the spread of Morgulons all over the world for the past, I don't know, fucking 30, 40 years. It's as stupid as the Foile à Deux, madness of two, explanation for why sometimes Morgulons cases occur in clusters. I know it occurred in a cluster of patients in Atlanta in June 2020 when I got this from my ex, and then my best friend caught it. So it's really not hard to bust up the arguments, assertions of those who claim Morgulons is a type of mass psychogenic illness. It is not. It does not fit the profile, and it is still going on. There are still new cases breaking out all the time, all over the world.
Hang in there. If you are one of those people who just got Morgulons,
it can get better. You can cope. And this does not define you.
And if you're listening to this, it means you're surviving. And if you're surviving, then you're a winner, a warrior, and a force to be reckoned with. So am I. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.